Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Menno, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I promise you we will get to your Twitter calls at some point today as Dave Dominick tries not to destroy this part of the office.
We're off to a good start.
We are off to an excellent start. John Schmelk, Lance Menno with you. We'll get to all that as we move along here. Obviously, folks, you know, we're kind of in no man's land. The Tuesday off the bye. No Giants game to talk about from the prior week. So we'll take a little bit of a different tact as we move forward on today's show. We'll do a little bit Giants-Eagles off the bat. Lance and Paul did a good kind of like halfway point thing yesterday with Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo talking to the media. So we'll look at the Eagles a tad, but we're also going to kind of do a round-the-league thing. Take a look at the NFC playoff picture, see where the Giants stand moving forward in the NFC, and just in general, talk about the league, where it stands in week number 9. And in between weeks 8 and 9, I guess this technically kind of is the halfway point in the league because there's 17 weeks, so we're kind of at the halfway point, kind of take stock of where we are. But Lance, let's start with the Giants, obviously, and of course we'll take your calls on anything you want to talk about in regards to the Giants at 201-939-4513. So Lance, let's start first with the Giants, the Eagles coming to town. I'm sure a lot of Giant fans watch them play the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Eagles defense, probably one of their poorer games of the year. They gave up over 450 yards of offense by Dallas. They held the Dallas run and pass game, though, in check for the most part.
Did a nice job.
Two long drives late in the game accounted for about 170 of those 450 yards. But the real challenge the Giants are going to have in this game is dealing with that Eagles front. Their defensive line is excellent. Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox. We'll see if Benny Logan is back this week. He's been out the last couple
Returned
weeks. Returned
to
injury.
Practice.
He was back at practice.
They anticipate he's going to have a bigger role on Wednesday. That's what Doug Peterson said.
Well,
the
there
other
you
day.
Go. He might be back in the lineup. Connor Barwin. And then you have Michael Kendricks, Aaron Hicks, a couple talented linebackers.
Jordan Hicks, yeah.
Jordan Hicks, excuse me. Aaron Hicks, the Yankees outfielder. And then, of course, you have Malcolm
Versatile
Jenkins.
Versatile guy, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
In the secondary. So this Philly defense is impressive. They can get after the quarterback. And I think this is probably this Giants offensive line's biggest challenge since they played the Vikings in terms of protecting Eli Manning.
No, I think that's a perfect example because the Vikings, if you remember, came into that game, John. They led the NFL in sacks that week with 15.
Yep.
Now you get an Eagles team that has 22 sacks, tied for third in the NFL, right up there. And, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. I think what's most impressive about the Eagles is how Jim Schwartz is involving everybody near the line of scrimmage to get this pass rush going. Of the 22 sacks, 17 of them come from the defensive line. That's number one. And then 12 different players have at least one sack. So that's an indication to me, John, that, you know, yes, the defensive line has done a lot of the heavy lifting, but he's also, if you've watched a lot of Eagles games, he's bringing guys from the secondary. He'll bring the linebackers back to the line of scrimmage. So pass protection, it goes without saying, I agree with you, by far the biggest test since the Vikings. I mean, the good news for the Giants is, and Justin Pugh brought this up, John, when he's talked with the media in recent weeks, he's been tested, whether it be Aaron Donald, whether it be Mike Daniels of the Green Bay Packers. You know, this is not uncharted territory for this Giants offensive line.
And I think Fletcher Cox is a good matchup for him this week.
Yeah, they've gone up against, not just Justin Pugh, I would say the line as a whole, they've been tested by
a
number of stingy defensive lines. So I don't think this is necessarily, oh my God, you know, the Giants haven't seen something like this, but Schwartz is very creative, the Eagles' defensive coordinator, and it's not just so much the offensive line. I think the running backs are going to play a really big role in this game because if members of the secondary come up, John, it's the responsibility of the running back perhaps to pick up that corner, pick up that safety to make sure that Eli has time to throw the football.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the Eagles' defense is very talented. Jim Schwartz, an excellent coordinator. We talked about that in the offseason when they brought him in. He could be a big impact defensive coordinator, and he has been this year. And the Eagles have also been great at forcing takeaways this year. They've been extremely opportunistic. Fumbles, interceptions, you name it. They're near the top of the league. I'll bring up the number for us right now in terms of takeaways and turnover ratio in general. Philly right now with 13 takeaways on the season, seven fumble recoveries, six interceptions. That's good for, I think they're tied for sixth in the NFL right now in terms of takeaways. They are plus six on the year,
which is fifth in the NFL.
The Giants have slowly began to normalize. They were around minus 11, minus 12 for a little bit. They're down to minus seven after having a couple good games in the turnover ratio.
Well, the Rams game helps specifically with those four interceptions.
Absolutely.
Plus three there.
So that's something else the Giants are going to have to be careful of. Philly's takeaways, defensive scores, and also lands their special teams.
Bingo.
Their kickoff return has probably been the best unit in the league this year. They almost had a return for a touchdown against Dallas on Sunday. They have a return for a touchdown earlier in the year.
Against the
Vikings. They've been very, very good.
Yeah, Josh Huff had the 98-yard kickoff return against Minnesota, and he was the one that nearly returned it against the Cowboys on Sunday night. And Darren Sproles, who's been very effective as their punt return guy, he's a Pro Bowl-esque special teamer. And, you know, let's not forget, Donnie Jones is a real solid punter, veteran guy, and Caleb Sturgis has really solidified the kicking game for them this season. He's 17 of 18 in terms of field goal attempts. So overall, I think special teams, not many weaknesses across the board, and their coverage units are very good too.
Now, offensively for the Eagles, this is where I think they might have some vulnerabilities. Their running back situation is kind of up in the air because you figure Ryan Matthews is going to be their full-time back. Over the course of the year, he's battled a lot of ankle injuries and other injuries. He played against Dallas, but only sparingly in goal line situations. And they actually used Darren Sproles as their number one primary option at tailback. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to do that again this week.
Yeah, it seems as if they're playing the hot hand, John.
Yeah.
That's what it indicated to me.
And Sproles looked great against Dallas,
by the way. Very shifty, very elusive, a small back. It's no secret they use him in the screen game as well, even though one of those passes backfired when Sean Lee made the stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, the Cowboys were able to make sure that the Eagles weren't in field goal range. But overall, I would agree with you. I think Darren Sproles seems to be that X factor in the backfield. And that doesn't mean that Ryan Matthews is not going to be involved on Sunday. It's just the Eagles tend to be the team. If Sproles is getting in motion and he's getting in rhythm, they're going to ride the hot hand as opposed to saying, you know what, Matthews is our workhorse, so we definitely need to feed the beast. Let's also not forget Wendell Smallwood, another young guy that they've brought into the mix.
Kenyon Barner, too, I believe,
he's
is there,
guy,
too, right?
Correct.
He actually got a couple carries against Dallas as well. So they have a couple weapons in the receiving game. Zach Ertz has been relatively quiet the last few weeks, but he's a very good tight end. Brent Celek's still there as well. And then, of course, you have Jordan Matthews sitting there as probably their top wide receiver. Both Doriel Green Beckham and Nelson Agholor, second-year players, talented, but both are still very inconsistent.
Very inconsistent, very up and down. A lot of drops.
A lot of drops.
John, this team. I think they had about maybe four or five again in the Cowboys game. I mean, that's been the one thing that they've done that's shot themselves in the feet throughout the course of this season, where Carson Wentz has put these players in the right position to thrive, and they just can't come through with him. Jordan Matthews is guilty of that too, and he's by far one of their most experienced wide receivers. That's something I think the Eagles are really going to take a look at this week, because Doug Peterson, I listened to his press conference the other day, and he was pressed by the media on this. You know, what can you do to get rid of the drops? What can you do to maybe take more chances down the field? And remember, that was a storyline that we were talking about when the Giants went up against the Ravens, John. That week, Baltimore changed offensive coordinator. And what did we say? Flacco's going to take a lot of chances down the field. And what did he do? I mean, they didn't waste any time.
No,
he went
they
down
did
the field
they
to Mike Wallace.
A lot.
I would not be surprised. Now, the Giants have a very strong secondary, and they've been playing very well defensively. But, you know, this may be the week where the Eagles sort of take a look in the mirror and say to themselves, you know, maybe we want to try to test this Giants defense like the Ravens did a few years ago.
Now, the problem they're going to run into when they try to test this Giants defense is protecting their quarterback. They had a number of injuries on the offensive line on Sunday night. Travis Kelce stayed in the game. Stayed in the game.
Travis Kelce, the
tight end for the Chiefs.
Correct.
He stayed in the game, but was kind of hobbled throughout. They lost their guard during the game.
Allen Barber, they lost.
And Lane Johnson's obviously on suspension.
Yes.
So they really are banged up on the offensive line right now.
By the way, I want you to read this name. This is the guy replacing Lane Johnson, by the way.
By the way, that was Chris Collinsworth tried to do that about three times during the Sunday night game. I have not practiced
now,
it.
I have practiced it because I've broken it down phonetically for reference throughout the course of this week and the weekend. But I just wanted to hear you try to butcher it a few times.
Hold on. I have to look at it a couple times.
That's the first name, by the way.
I know. By the way, the first name looks like it's six syllables.
The second name's not
bad. Yeah, that one I can get.
He's a rookie, by the way, playing right tackle.
Hala Puli Vati Vaitai.
Not bad. That's very smooth.
How about that?
How about that? That rolled off the tongue very nicely. And we should mention, Alan Barber, who's the guard that you talked about, who strained his hamstring, he's week to week. I'd be very surprised if he plays. However, they've got a nice veteran who's the backup center and the backup guard, who was with the Oakland Raiders, and that's Stefan Wisniewski.
Wisniewski,
who's played very well replacing Barber against the Cowboys. I don't think that's going to be an issue for them.
But the Lane Johnson thing could
Lane Johnson is a big miss, but they've been impressed with what Vitae has shown during the course of training camp as well as the early stages.
But the Cowboys also don't have pass rushers like Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivier Vernon. I would like to see how he does against a bigger pass rusher in that situation. Finally, Carson Wentz. His numbers, Lance, are very good, but the one that jumps out to me, and we talked about this on the mailbag that I think is going to go up on Giants.com. It might even be up there already. His yards per completion and yards per pass is extremely low. They throw a lot of those receiver screens at the line of scrimmage. He started to throw the ball down the field a little bit more the second half of the Cowboys game, but they really keep him in a low danger zone. They don't want to put him in a position where he has to force the ball down the field. And that's why I think in this particular game, if the Giants can get a lead early and force Carson Wentz to try to take some chances down the field, maybe you can force some takeaways and things like that. Because the Eagles want to play with the lead, let their defense get after your quarterback, and be very conservative on offense.
Well, and that's why he's been so effective at protecting the football. He only has three interceptions on the season, two of which came in one game, I believe, against the Vikings. So they don't want him to press the envelope. They don't want to put him in a risky situation. I agree. I think if the Giants do get a lead, maybe they can get him out of his comfort zone. But what he's been doing is they involve the running backs in the passing game. He takes the underneath routes to his receivers as well as his tight ends. They have three tight ends, all who can easily run routes and be productive players in the passing game. So I'm going to be very interested to see whether or not the Eagles, as part of their game plan, maybe they let him spread his wings a little bit more, you know, unlike what we've seen in years past. It was interesting. Doug Peterson, he was reviewing the Cowboys film, and he noticed, and this reminded me of what we've been talking about with the Giants, John, that he said Dallas had a lot of two safety looks. So they also didn't even want Carson Wentz to take any chances down the field. Mm-hmm. And that's why Wentz, who also spoke with the media, said, you know what, I was just taking what Dallas gave me, whatever they presented.
It looked like Dallas was playing a very soft zone in that game.
So
absolutely.
What do the Giants bring to the table? And this is something that Eli Manning and company have had to deal with on the opposing sideline, where the defenses have always lined up two safeties, and they're like, hey, take the underneath routes because we're not giving you Odell Beckham down the field.
All right, now let's go around the league a little bit. We'll get to your calls in 5 minutes or so at 201-939-4513. Hang tight. And I guess the best place to start, Lance, is last night's game. Surprising game, to say the least, because to me, the Bears' offensive line has been a mess all year. Their two offensive tackles, frankly, are young and inexperienced, are not very good. Their two starting guards were hurt a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
They have backups there. But they actually did a fairly good job against the Vikings' defensive line in that game. Jordan Howard had over 100 yards rushing in that contest. And on the other hand, the Vikings' offensive line, with T.J. Clemmings moving back to right tackle now, with Jake Long being out there on the left side, they couldn't block anybody. Even the interior linemen for the Vikings struggled in that game. And, boy, the Bears handled them start to finish. I couldn't believe it.
Well, the Bears' pass rush has improved a little by little because they've gotten some players back.
McPhee was excellent yesterday.
McPhee, correct. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that I think is now all of a sudden putting the key in the ignition, and Vic Fangio's able to get creative, their defensive coordinator. Yeah, the biggest storyline out of yesterday's game, and, you know, this goes back to topics that we've talked about on this program, just to show you there are other teams with offensive line issues, John.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Vikings, they're dealing with pass protection issues.
And if you remember,
running the football, too, which is an issue.
Before the season, they cut someone who was their starting center because they thought they had so much O-line depth they didn't need him. And they were considered to have one of the deepest offensive line groups in the league. And you're in week eight, and all of a sudden they're in shambles.
Sullivan, I believe. That's who they had as their veteran center.
Absolutely.
They let him go.
Mm-hmm.
They went in a different direction. I mean, I don't know if necessarily that would help them because they're losing their tackles and their guards right
Correct.
Now. But
the point being is that you can prepare and, you know, be very happy with your depth. 2-3 injuries, doesn't matter how happy you are. You're going to be in bad shape.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, Alex Boone got banged up too in yesterday's game. Mm-hmm. So they may be without him. And they're already without Andre Smith, the tackle. That's why Jake Long came in. I mean, these guys are dropping like flies. Phil Lodeholt, who was the tackle that retired, that brought about the game of musical chairs before the season even started. I mean, they've already lost about 4 or 5 offensive linemen. We're not even, you know, into week 9 or week 10. So there are all types of teams that are having all types of issues with the offensive line. And notice how, you know, the Vikings went from a team that was extremely balanced, and then offensive line problems come to the forefront, and now all of a sudden, Sam Bradford can't go down the field with Stephon Diggs as consistently. They're not running the football. And even with Adrian Peterson not in the mix, what McKinnon and Asiata brought to the table was respectable.
It was fine.
But now, because of the pass protection and the run blocking, Vikings are not nearly as balanced and scary as they were a few weeks ago.
And when you look at Bradford, it's what we saw from Eli Manning a few weeks ago. Yeah, he was getting hit a lot. But even on plays where it looked like he had a good pocket,
you sense it still. Yeah.
Heads on a swivel.
Correct.
And he gets the happy feet. Absolutely. So I thought that was interesting. The Vikings now have lost two in a row, only one game ahead of the Packers. And by the way, don't sleep on the Lions. They're at 4-4.
I brought that up yesterday.
I was surprised that they lost to Houston, to be honest with you, because I'm extremely unimpressed with the Texans. I don't think they're very good, but they lost to them this week. In Houston, though, they play well at home. But the Lions are sitting there at 4-4, and Matt Stafford, surprisingly, and they had a couple stories about this, they think Calvin Johnson leaving has actually helped Matthew Stafford in that he doesn't have that guy that he can fall back to just throw it up to him and hope. He actually now has to go through all his progressions, trust all his receivers, and it's made him a more complete quarterback.
I think that's a great emphasis in terms of why he's been so effective this season. And you look at the personnel they brought in, Marvin Jones from the Bengals. You have Golden Tate still. Anquan Boldin they added, who's a nice possession receiver. Eric Ebron's healthy. And then what Theo Riddick, their running back, has been able to do. So he's got a number of different weapons, whereas even though Calvin Johnson was surrounded by other talent, it just seemed that more often than not, Stafford would, I agree with you, Johnny, he'd throw it down the field, and he'd have Calvin Johnson jump up and try to beat the corner.
Not a bad strategy, by the way.
Correct, but that would mainly be their offensive game plan. Correct. There wasn't much balance, versatility. This season, there's a lot more balance, a lot more versatility.
Oh, yeah.
And I brought it up, and the reason why I brought up the Lions yesterday, John, it's interesting you brought it up, is because the Giants still have the Lions coming up this season, and that, to me,
tiebreaker.
Correct. Outside of the divisional games, is by far the most important game on the Giants' schedule.
Yeah, because the AFC games, you know, they have three AFC North games left. Who cares? That has no effect on tiebreakers.
It's the Lions game.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of teams in the playoff hunt.
I'm with you on that.
That's a very important game. And
in
that
fact,
has
that's
to
the,
be emphasized.
That's the only...
Well, you got the schedule to the right of you here.
Okay, that's a fair point. I'm just trying to remember. Oh, Chicago. They have one other non-division NFC game besides Detroit. But both games are at home because the Giants played at Minnesota and at Green Bay already. And they've also already played the Saints and the Rams, the two other non-division NFC opponents.
Well, and here's another thing that I want to throw out. I know maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but yesterday I had brought up that, you know, it looks as if right now, I think it's fair to say that the NFC East and the NFC North, John, are the two divisions that are more likely to have at least two representatives, perhaps, when it comes to the playoffs. I think that the NFC West at this point, you know, Arizona with the tie, very up and down. They've got injuries on the offensive line. Who knows if that division's going to get two reps? And the same thing with the South at this point.
To me, there are two dangerous teams that some people want to count out, but I'm not there yet. Are either the Panthers or the Cardinals going to make a run? You know, they were excellent teams last year. For the most part, you know, spare Josh Norman for the Panthers. They're returning more or less the same rosters they had last year. They didn't have serious attrition with either group. Again, besides Josh Norman, which has been a huge impact on the defense of the Panthers. No argument there. But will one of those two teams here make a late run, win four or five games in a row, and get to 10-6 or 9-7 and make the playoffs? To me, that's the danger. Green Bay's at 4-3. They'll be in it to the end. Whether they make it or not, we'll see. I still think that there's something a little bit missing with them. And I'm not willing to say the Falcons have the NFC South wrapped up yet either.
No, not at all. I mean, listen,
it's only one game in the loss column.
Yeah.
5-3 versus 3-4. I'm not willing to say that's done yet. So I think the NFC, here are the only teams I will say I'm confident will not be in the playoffs in the NFC. I do not think the Chicago Bears will be in the playoffs. I do
49ers.
Not think the San Francisco 49ers will be in the playoffs. Even though they're 3-4, and mathematically they're in good shape, I do not believe the Los Angeles Rams will be in the playoffs.
Well, here's why I'll tell you the Rams are not going to be in the playoffs. This was an interesting nugget in the wake of the Giants game. Did you know that any team that's lost in London has never finished with a winning record?
Is that true?
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I didn't know that.
Never has finished with a winning
record. All right, so good.
So
I
that's
feel
why I'm
better about it now.
The Rams,
out.
You should feel good about
okay.
that. So those three.
And I don't think the Bucks are going to make it either. I don't think the Bucks are quite good enough
but
at 3-4.
I think they're going to hang around, though, to make things interesting.
Maybe. I
think
I don't see them
around.
Finishing better than 8-8, though.
and I don't disagree with you, but they're a sneaky team.
See, the Saints to me, for some reason, and I'm never huge on the Saints because I feel like they're extremely unbalanced, I think the Saints are a little bit better this year. I think the Saints have an outside shot to make a run. Outside shot.
Big win against the Seahawks this past
year. Absolutely. And they're very good at home again. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. They're now 2-2 at home. They started slow, but they're doing better. So the NFC, there's a lot of volatility here. And I know the Cowboys are 6-1, but that's only a two-game lead in the NFC East. And the Giants right now at the tiebreaker against Dallas. And, of course, you have the Redskins at 4-3-1 in a virtual tie with the Giants and Eagles, who are both at 4-3. So it's a mess.
Well, and the reason why we brought up this conversation, too, because it started off with the Lions, I was going to throw out that, depending on how things play out, I would not rule out maybe the NFC North gets three representatives in the playoffs this year.
Three?
Yeah,
huh?
I agree with you, because there is something about the Lions. There is something about Detroit, and defensively they've impressed me, too, this season. Let's not overlook that.
I feel better about the three teams in the NFC East than I do than the Lions. The Redskins are feisty, man.
They are.
The Redskins are feisty. There's something about them. And the Eagles have a good defense. I think the Lions will be in the mix. I don't think they'll make it in the end. Here's the rest of the Lions schedule, by the way. Let's take a look at the Lions schedule the rest of the way. And then we'll get to your calls at 201-939-4513. They go to Minnesota. Then they host Jacksonville. Then they host Minnesota. So they have two out of the next three against the Vikings.
Well, who knows? I mean, they could split those two.
Good time to have the Vikings,
correct,
though, because they're struggling.
With the issues against the offensive line.
They go to New Orleans, host Chicago, at Giants, at Dallas, host Packers. There are some tough games in there.
There are. I mean, clearly they got the division games, which is not necessarily a surprise.
Yeah, but two versus the Vikings, one at the Saints, at Giants, at Dallas, home versus Green Bay. It's tough. Tough schedule.
Well, with Matthew
Stafford, they'd be
hard
pressed to finish with 9 or 10 wins.
With him spreading the wealth, here's the one thing I will say about the Lions: mm-hmm. They can score with a lot of teams this year.
They can,
and I know they didn't put up a lot of points against the Texans, but the Texans have a pretty good defense,
especially at home.
That.
Yes, yeah. And Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, two good wide receivers.
But if you
no
look
argument.
At Detroit, I mean, the Lions, they could put up points, so that bodes well for them this season. I agree with you. It's
no running game though. That's the
schedule.
Problem.
Well, but here's the thing: Riddick has served as like that fourth, fifth receiver. Mm-hmm. And what they're not getting on the ground, they're getting through the air with him, and he's actually going to be back. Well, he actually returned this last game, and then he'll be hopefully back in the mix full go if he stays healthy.
All right, folks, let's get to it.
Team.
201-939-4513. Giants around the league. Anything you want to talk about, we could talk about surprise teams, anything else you want to touch on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. All right, JD, you're in North Carolina. You're going to lead us off today. How you doing, pal?
Hey, John Lance. How you guys doing today?
Doing great, JD. How are you?
Good, good, thanks. Second place with the Eagles coming to town, pretty exciting right now. And I'd say aside from the run game, it looks like the team is improving week to week. So it's pretty fun to be a Giants fan right now. Wanted to touch on one thing on the offense and the defense real quick, get your guys' opinion. There's this concept out there, for some of the coaches, I think have even expressed this, that sacks are overrated and pressures are the real number you want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
That does make sense, but I would like to respectfully disagree. I think there is a huge difference between sacks and pressures. Quarterbacks can still complete passes under pressure, especially the NFL. And one of the inherent benefits of getting a sack is that there's a chance of a turnover there. You get your hands on the quarterback, and he is, of all the guys on the field, he's the most likely guy to cough the ball up.
That's fair.
And unfortunately, we have been on the receiving end of that a couple of times with Eli. I think recently, the last couple of times he got hit, he actually did a really good job of holding on to the ball. So that's good to see. But as far as our defense getting sacks and where our pressure's coming from, I wanted to get your guys' opinion. Why are these guys not getting home more? Is this just the kind of player JPP is now? Is he not going to be as good as he was? Did we maybe overvalue Olivier Vernon's pass rush ability, or is there something else going on that you guys are seeing as far as why these guys are way under where they should be with the sacks, realistically?
You know, JD, it's a great question, and I don't think there's a great answer. At least I don't have one for you. I don't think, the coaches or the general manager, you heard from Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo yesterday as well, and Steve Spagnuolo has been asked this question pretty much every week this year, and he doesn't have a great answer. But, a lot of times, and I think this is why, JD, they think pressures and quarterback hits are just as important, if not more important, than sacks. And that's opposing quarterbacks can have a huge impact on the sack statistic For example, Eli Manning regularly is in the bottom five of the league in terms of number of times a quarterback has been sacked. Now, would you say the Giants have had a top five pass-protecting offensive line the last 5 or 6 years? No. I wouldn't say that. You wouldn't say that. Nobody would say that watches the games. But the reason he's always in the bottom five of the league in terms of sacks is because he can recognize the blitz and get rid of the ball. Now, quarterbacks cannot affect pressures, and they cannot affect how many times they get knocked down after they throw the football. And sacks, you're right in that they're much more valuable than pressures and knockdowns and quarterback hits. No argument. I think the coaching staff would tell you that. Everybody would tell you that. But I think the point that the coaches make is that a team has more control over pressures than they have over sacks, because the quarterback getting rid of the football or the offensive scheme with quick release, getting the ball out, that's something the defense can't affect. That is what it is, and you can't change that. So I think their theory is that you keep getting pressures, you keep getting into the backfield, eventually the sacks will come. Now, we'll see if that works out or not, but I think that's why when defensive coaches look at stats that indicate if their defensive line is putting pressure on the quarterback, they look at pressures, because that's something that they have full control over. They can't control if Drew Brees is getting rid of the ball before JPP gets there in 1.6 seconds.
Yeah, a lot of quarterbacks throughout the league are getting rid of the football quicker and quicker. I mean, I think that's been well documented. You know, JD, you brought up the fact that, you know, is JPP this type of player? Let's not forget, outside of 2011, when he had 16.5 sacks, and then in 2014, when he had 12.5.
And if we remember, in 2014, about six of those came in the final three games when the season was already over.
If you look at his numbers, and I just brought them up, we're talking about a max of 6.5 sacks in 2012. Mm-hmm. That's the highest outside of those two seasons. So if you put things in perspective, and this is not to make an excuse when we say, you know, well, is JPP that type of player? If you add up his average sacks per season, he's not getting, we're talking 10 or 11 a season.
Well, let's say he's been in the league, JD, since 2010. If you don't want to count this year, because obviously it's just started, he's played in six full NFL seasons, and in those six NFL seasons, he has 43 sacks, which is an average of about seven sacks per year.
So we're not in the double digits, though, mm-hmm. based on the average, if that's what people are anticipating or what they're expecting. Now, with respect to Olivier Vernon, if you go to Vernon's numbers last year with the Dolphins, got off to a very slow start. His sacks also increased in the second half of the season.
His final eight games last year were far more productive than his first, and he's also dealing with an injury, too, to his wrist. His wrist taped up every week. He refuses to talk about what the injury is, but he's dealing with it. Jerry Reese mentioned in his press conference yesterday. I'm sure that's affecting him to a certain extent, but Olivier Vernon has never and will never use that as an excuse. He's asked about it. He refuses to even talk about the injury. But you hope that, like last year, he might be more productive with final sack numbers in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Spags has brought this up. Jerry Reese even brought this up yesterday in terms of what JD was commenting on, that it's more effective to get those quarterback hits, quarterback pressures, as opposed to get all worked up about the sack numbers. And I think that, you know, if you can move guys out of the pocket who are not mobile quarterbacks, if you get your secondary involved with some pressure, you know, that consistently will add up to better results than just banking on, well, maybe this is going to be the game where we're going to get three or four sacks.
Yeah, the key is affecting the quarterback.
Correct. Making the quarterback uncomfortable. But at the same time, there are a lot of quarterbacks that within the fraction of the snap, they're going to get rid of the football. And those are things that you can't account for. That's why you can't bank on going into a game every week and saying, hey, this is going to be the game we're going to get a handful of sacks.
That being said, JD is absolutely right. And when you take a look at the, you know, overall rankings in terms of, and I'll use this because this is the stat page I happen to have up, in terms of sacks per pass attempt, which I think is a better metric
than total sacks
because it all depends on, you know, how many times the other team throws the ball against you and how many plays you're on the field.
Of course.
And the Giants right now are 31st in the league in sacks per pass attempt. And look, you can say quarterbacks.
I wanted to get your opinion on as well, because I completely, you know, it's completely logical. If your guys are getting pressure, then mathematically the longer they're out there, the higher chance of actually getting home and getting a sack they're going to have. However, JPP and Olivier Vernon have been on the field more than any other defensive end combo.
That's a
in
fair
the
point.
NFL this
it's a
year.
Fair point.
Well, and they're still not getting home. And that's why there's a little bit of, like, what's going on here, because the results are not there, and there's abnormalities in the amount that these guys are being used. So is there an issue that Are they being used too much? Are they getting worn down and not getting rotated enough? Is there something with the scheme? Are they not blitzing? You know, are they not getting enough A-gap pressure and actually, you know, finalize, you know, sealing the deal to actually get that little bit of extra pressure that they need to get the sack? So I think there's a lot to look at there as far as, you know. But, yeah, you guys made great points, absolutely. And I can't disagree with any of that. And then the last thing I wanted to get your opinion on is, as far as the offense goes, obviously there's a lot of stats out there and data as far as the formation the Giants are using. I think it was 96% of the time they've been in that 11 formation this year.
Yeah, give or take.
Do you think that the reason they're doing that is the coaching staff is being a little too dependent on the fact that we've got these three, you know, excellent wide receivers, and that they are expecting that these guys should be going out there and beating their guys all the time, and that's kind of why they want to keep them on the field all the time?
No, JD, honestly, I think the reason they want those three guys on the field all the time is because they're their best players. I mean, you're sitting there and you're a coach, and you say, who would I rather have on the field, you know, Will Ty, Larry Donnell, or Sterling Shepard? Who are you picking?
Going to go with your best talent.
Oh, absolutely, but at a certain point, you're over. I mean, 96% is a little. That's going to open anybody's eyes as far as running out of that one formation during a game. So, I don't know. I guess that's just my opinion. I think they're probably putting a little too much. They're depending too much on the fact that we do have these three really good wide receivers, and I think it's a little unrealistic to think that, okay, we're just going to keep them out there all the time, and they're just going to beat their guys so much more often than they're going to get beat, and the points are going to come.
Well, JD, to emphasize your point, and I think it's a valid point, but
and thanks for the call, by the way, JD. We appreciate it.
There is a huge disparity between, you know, we were talking about JPP and Olivier Vernon and how much they were on the field over, I think we did the show a few weeks ago, it was like over 400 snaps at one point for the two of them compared to the rest of the league, which was a wide disparity. On the flip side, on offense, I mean, think about it. The Giants are dead last in time of possession per game. They have not run nearly as many plays as their opponents.
And part of that is third down offense, by the way, because they can't get first downs to stay on the field.
So the point is, I think that what personnel you use on the field goes hand in hand with how many plays you're running. And if you're not running a lot of plays and you're not wearing down your personnel, the Giants' mindset is, well, why are we taking these guys off the field? I mean, we've got to take advantage of the limited opportunities they're on the field is my point.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And I think also, bottom line, folks, I mean, right now, I think the coach and the team is strapped based on what they can do in terms of personnel groupings based on the personnel on the roster. They don't have a fullback. They don't have a lead blocker. It's not on the roster. They don't have a player capable of doing that. So why would you then take a better wide receiver off the field for, say, a second tight end if you're going to play, you know, 12 personnel, which is one running back, two tight ends, two wide receivers? Why would you take Victor Cruz, Sterling Shepard, or Odell Beckham Jr. off the field for Donnell or Ty when both those guys struggle blocking anyway? They're not going to help you much blocking. And the other receivers are better catchers of the football.
Better execution. The only other counter argument would be to maybe throw in a Brett Jones, an extra offensive lineman,
right,
which they could toy
which
with.
Which you can do. That's
in
fair.
Short yardage situations.
That's fair. Right.
I think you can maybe toy with that.
You can even go four wide receivers if you want, maybe. If you want to put Roger Lewis Jr. in the game and take
Tavares
the tight end off the field completely, you can do that too.
Could certainly play around with that. No
Absolutely.
Doubt. Yeah. I mean, and that's something that I think that they, you know, looked at over the course of the bye week. But, you know, I would agree with you, John. You need to say to yourself, if we take these guys off the field, do the replacements come in and can they execute at the same level, if not better? And if the answer is no, then it's not worth sacrificing your three wide receiver sets. Unless, as I mentioned, you're in like a third and one or a fourth and one and you know you're going to pound the football, then you know what? Bring in the extra body.
And remember this, too. You know, JD was talking about formations. 11 is a personnel group. You can do 11 personnel, but put them in different formations. You can put trips on one side of the field.
You
can stack the guys in different ways, which changes the formation, even though the personnel group remains the same. So you can be creative even with the same guys on the field. But you're right. You become more predictable when you always have the same personnel groups. I mean, it's just the way it is. You can only do so many things with certain people on the field. But again, based on the personnel on the roster, there is no fullback. There's no lead blocker. It makes it difficult to be more creative when when that's the situation.
There's limitations based on what the 53-man roster is.
And again, Will Johnson was supposed to be that guy, but he got hurt at the end of the year. And they couldn't find somebody on the waiver wire that could fill that role. 201-939-4513. Back to the calls. Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Lance, John, how long did it take you, John, to get over that coming back from England there? Did you get a little jet lag?
You know what, Joe? And it's funny. I am almost, for some reason, I'm kind of impervious to jet lag. It doesn't bother me. Like, we flew over to London Thursday night. So we left around 9 o'clock Thursday night, landed like 8 a.m. London time Thursday morning. I slept about 2 hours on the plane. I did the 13-hour day of work, and then I went to bed. And once you do that and you get on London time and you're going to bed at 10 o'clock London time, you're fine. You're set. So I got back from London. We landed around 12:30 or so.
Just after midnight.
Got home around 1:30, 1:45, 2 o'clock. Then, because I was terrified of spoilers online, I watched the season premiere of The Walking Dead. And then I went to bed around 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. Boy, that was some Monday for
yes,
you.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But you know what? Once you get on the schedule, the key is never take a long sleep in the middle of the day.
Because then it'll screw
you up. Because then that screws you up for the rest of the trip. You have to just fight through that first day and get on the place you're going to schedule, and then you're going to be okay.
Okay, that's good. I hope our Giants are all waked up.
Oh, they're all fine. Don't worry. Trust me. They had a lot of R&R the last couple of days, Joe. Believe
me. Now, Joe, it's time for us to ask you a question before we get to the important subjects. Have you fully recovered? I know you were very passionate.
No,
he was very worked up when he called Paul and I last week.
Oh,
really?
To go,
very
Lance,
fired up.
And I haven't changed or moved off my decision. You were talking about the offensive line now or the formations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just watching the Dallas game in that, even Dallas put a fullback in or put one of their tight ends back there with their running back.
Hey, Joe, believe it or not, Dallas has two fullbacks in their rosters, Rod Smith and who's the other one?
Yeah.
I forget who the other guy is, but they actually have two fullbacks on their roster. So their roster is constructed a little differently than the Giants' roster is.
Well, and Joe, the other thing I was going to add is,
I don't care what it's constructed, but if we're in, we have three wide receivers out there, and they have their front four up there against our offensive line, and Eli just can't, he just gets the snap and they're in their face. We better do something. We better go to a six-man line. I don't care. Put somebody, two men in the backfield to help block, because it's easy to bang your receivers at the line of scrimmage. How far are they going to get? The safeties and that can double them down, and we ain't going nowhere. So, I mean, we got to do something, especially if Eli's getting killed. I'd rather go to a six-man line. They got to learn the block, and that's the bottom line, and put two guys in the backfield. This way we will pound on their offensive or defensive line a little bit. Maybe they'll tire them out a little bit. Then we can go to a three-man wide receivers or so. But we got to do something if Eli's getting killed. And that's
well, but, Joe,
happening.
In fairness, I think there were games earlier this season where Eli took his fair share of hits. The Vikings game jumps out to me. The Packers game, too.
Absolutely.
But I think that the
– and we're facing the same type of defense.
Well, we'll see.
And Schwartz is going to blitz more, especially, too. He's starting.
I would agree with you. I think that's fair.
Coming in here. And that's it with the Eagles. We got to stop that.
Told you
that's
still
our
up,
offense. Yeah. I don't care.
This
we
is where it was before
do
the
that and let Eli get killed. We have to do something else.
Well, and those situations that present themselves where it's short yarded situations or you are seeing the blitz, then yes, I mean that calls upon making some adjustments.
If he's getting the snap and they're in their face, something else.
Yeah, but Joe, remember this too. If you want to go big, the defense is going to respond with their own substitution and go big
themselves.
Oh, Joe, just let me finish.
I like our defense against their offense.
I agree with that.
How many years I've watched that we had a rundown Donovan McNabb. He's not back there no more. Then they came with Michael Vick and Kelly. We had to run them down, and LaShawn Jackson and Shady McCoy. They don't have them no more. I like our receivers up against their
defensive backs
up against their receivers, and I like our defense. I think our defense is a top 10. And as far as the sacks and stuff coming like that, I believe just like the interceptions. They'll come in bunches. Our defense is playing good, and we'll be there. But it's our offense. We can't be turning the ball over and putting our defense out there to dry continuously. And it, after two series, we got to give our pass rushers a break if they're out there for two series against another offense. That we should do, too. And they're good enough to replace them because we're going to wear them down like that. So that's what I have to say, and we better go. There was one other thing I'd bring up.
Yeah, real quick, Joe.
This weekend, and it's penalties there. The teams, Josh Norman, he was complaining about being tagged all the time. In the
called
last
for five,
two games, we were there with DRC. I hate that call there again in that what game? I forget. What
talking
was
about
that,
the Ravens game. Ravens
right.
game, the pass
you're
interference.
Ticky tack falls, and then it burns me up in the last game there against Ty there. He was out when the ball's in the end in the air and they're not calling these. Then you have the guy, the quarterback from Carolina, he's complaining. It's time for these referees to be accountable. They said too, bring him on after the show and call, why did you call this? Why didn't you call that? Then you'll change. And if they don't, then they get out. You bring somebody else.
Well, Joe, in fairness, I think these guys are trying to do the best they can. I mean, it's not like they're dogging it out there.
Consistency, and they're not being consistent.
Well, but, Joe.
That's the truth.
Joe, all right, thanks, Joe. Appreciate the call.
Appreciate the call. And I know that it's been a big topic of discussion. Number one. Officials are not full-time employees. That's number one.
That doesn't
matter.
No,
but that's been discussed
me.
At least
it's
as perhaps
stupid,
something to change.
It's not going
to
change. You're making split-second decisions on a Sunday. How does that get affected by whether or not the guy's, you know, a pediatrician on a Tuesday?
No,
what's
no, no,
the difference? Who cares?
The point is that maybe during the week you have a little bit more training that you go through, video study, because you have the time. You're not focused on your other job. That, I think, is relevant. I would agree with you, though. It's fast speed. They don't have the benefit of replay
Correct.
Like you and I have when we're watching on the TV screen, and I think the fan base needs to understand that. If you see something at full speed, yeah, there's going to be chances where things are going to be missed. It's understandable. And you hope replay can correct things, but a lot of it are judgment calls, and at full speed, if you put yourself in that position, you're probably going to miss calls as well. I think it's important to at least look at it from that perspective.
It's a much tougher job than I think people give it credit
without
for.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. The other thing I was going to bring up in relation to what Joe brought up, you know, he was talking about the Cowboys personnel. Keith Smith is their other fullback, by
Keith
the way,
Smith.
In addition
okay.
to
there
Rod Smith. Mm-hmm. And they have three tight ends on the roster. James Hanna is one of them. I mean, all of these guys are known for their blocking. That's the distinct difference. That's why they're able to toy with these guys and bring them in different formations, because the three players we just named, they're known for their blocking. So personnel on the 53 dictates who you use, who you take out, and how the game flows. You can't overlook that. Cowboys have a different group of personnel than what the Giants present.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls. I'm also looking at Twitter right here as well. If you guys get some questions in there, we can throw in. I see a lot of comments. Nothing much different than what we've been talking about. You can get in there and talk about it if you like. Sean is only out in California getting up early with us on a Tuesday morning. What's up, Sean?
How you guys doing this morning?
What's up, Sean?
Nice. I have to make some points, not really points, but is it better for us or worse for us that we're playing Philadelphia after they lost two straight?
I always prefer to play a team off a win. That's just me. I think it's better. I do not like playing teams off of losing streaks because I think they're a little bit more
they're
spicy, for lack of a better word.
Because we're 0-2 in the division as well.
Right.
This is pretty crazy. Being that the way they've been playing. But anyhow, I was thinking about, like, how we've been, you know, how we've been running our plays on our first snaps and, you know, our first possession. And it seems that, you know, every week, it's like they're not going to call, like, the same plays. But, like, the opening possessions are, like, similar plays. Maybe not the same, but really similar. And I think, I know we have to see what Philadelphia's defense is playing and then maneuver around that, but why not just, you know, I know you need to run the ball in order to establish play action, but why not, if we get the ball first, you know, we get the kickoff, why not just run straight like a sick and nod, like right out of the dirt, play action over the top, just to get them thinking. You know, we have a chance for pass interference, we have a chance. You know, I think Eli is a veteran quarterback where he really knows how to position the ball. So just out of the gate, just run a sick and not or something over the top to just get the Philadelphia defenders thinking.
Well, Sean, the one problem you have with that is that you said you want to run play action and throw it deep. Right now, nobody respects the Giants' running game, so play action's not going to be
that
effective.
They're dead last. They're just going to bite on it. I feel you on that. And then another thing I wanted to add is what you guys were talking about earlier, kind of simple. Let the referees, I don't really blame them for anything, but what I think really needs to happen is coaches need to be able to challenge PI. I think that's a must. Because there's a lot of plays that, you know, that Giants made, not only the Giants, but other players that I don't think that was necessarily pass interference, and then they got calls for pass interference.
Yeah, but Sean,
you know,
the problem with that, and here's the problem with that. That is a judgment call. There are plenty of situations where there's contact on a pass, but you don't think it's enough contact where it, you know, prohibited the receiver from going after the ball, so it's non-interference. Once you start breaking that down, you will literally have each coach use both their challenges in every single game. If you're able to challenge pass interferences, games are going to slow down.
And you're not going to have them when you really need them.
And I think it's going to cause more of a mess because you have these pass interferences go to replay, and you want to talk about inconsistent from week to week? You start reviewing pass interferences, then all of a sudden, look at it this way. Once you start playing in these games and the crews are calling a game the way they call them, and again, this is the perfect world where a crew is consistent throughout the game. Well, let's say in one particular game, the crew's allowing defensive backs to be more physical with the wide receivers, right? They're allowing more contact down the field, but they're being consistent on both sides. But in the fourth quarter, you know what? There's contact down the field on a deep pass. It's something all game that they haven't been calling pass interference.
Now, all of a sudden,
somebody challenges the play. It goes to the replay booth in New York, and they're looking at it. And they say, no, hold on a second. Even though all game long that wasn't being called pass interference, by the rule book, it is pass interference. So then all of a sudden, you almost create more inconsistency by bringing replay into the mix than if you had it. Again, that's one situation. Then there are other situations, like at the end of the Falcons game a couple weeks ago when Julio Jones gets pulled down by Richard Sherman. I don't care what rule book you're using. That's pass interference. So if there's a way to do it where you only correct the truly egregious ones, I guess
yeah,
I can get behind it.
That, yeah.
But there's no way to word the rule where you can achieve that goal. You
it's
know what I mean?
It's an interpretive rule.
Yeah.
It's written, but then it's the job of the official to interpret it.
And I'm just going to leave it at that. Like, I hope we can find our identity in the past, the running game. This week, I know it's going to be hard, but hopefully we can knock out a good few ones. I want to see Paul Perkins actually get some snaps. That'll be a little bit of a good, you know, surprise. See him get my, not a surprise, but see him get more involved in the offense. You know, give him some snaps. I'd like to see, you know, us throw the ball to Adams. See what, you know, work him into the offense. Maybe like how the Patriots won, you know, their two tight ends. Maybe we can do something like that. And I'll just leave it like I hope we can, you know, put the Eagles in an 0-3 slump in the division games, and because I don't want it to come down to week 16 and 17 where our division is on the line against Washington and the Eagles. Playoffs, you know.
Well, Sean, we got to run, man. Thank you.
I want to be in the playoffs, and I want them to be fighting for the wild card spot.
All right, Sean, appreciate the phone. I think those games are going to be important regardless of how you play it
out.
I mean, you're not going to get a situation where, you know, week 16 and 17, you sit back, you relax, and you're like, all right, guys, you play amongst yourselves while we're just all of a sudden tiptoeing into the playoffs. It's going to be an important game.
I want to go back. I think it was Joe that said this, too. He said, I love the Giants wide receiver matchup against the Eagle defensive backs. I'm done with that. I've heard so many times this year where the Rams have, you know, Tremaine Johnson's not playing.
Packers lost two starters.
Packers had no starters in that game.
Yeah.
Even the first half against Baltimore, when they were banged up, the Giants didn't move the ball well until the second half when they made a bunch of big plays.
People read way too much into that.
The cornerbacks are important, folks, but, you know, not having two safeties deep, getting to the quarterback, that sort of stuff, it's just as important as the cornerback wide receiver matchups. They really are.
Well, first of all, the Eagles have two of the top safeties in the NFL.
Yes.
Malcolm Jenkins is by far one of the best safeties in the NFL. The numbers show it. The eye test shows it. And Rodney McLeod, who they signed from the Rams, who was a teammate of Janoris Jenkins, was having a breakout campaign last year, and that's a big reason
Correct.
Why he was able to get a lucrative offer. So they have really strong safety play. Yeah, the corners, perhaps it's attractive on paper, but remember, the safeties play a big role in that secondary as well.
And I do like, and I think at D underscore Ricker 81, he says, Philly has no downfield threat on offense. Our healthy secondary should match up well, just out of stop the run and the tight end. Now, I do agree with him. I think if you put the Giants corners out there and you man up and you challenge these, you know, Philly wide receivers to create separation in one-on-one, I'm not sure they can do it. Maybe they can, but I'd be willing to put my cornerbacks out on islands here, maybe bring a little bit of heat against the Eagles and force their wide receivers to beat the Giant corners. I think that is a good matchup for the Giants.
Well, I mean, it depends on the Philadelphia offensive philosophy. If they do this dink and dunk, I mean, they've been effective moving the chains. So I agree. I mean, I can see the Giants taking away the explosive plays, but Wentz then will settle for the five-yard pass.
Well, unless they do the press, bump, and run.
If you're taking away, but well, that means then the Giants' defense is going to be superb then on Sunday if they're taking away everything. Because Wentz has been good at saying, hey, I don't have the options deep. Fine, I'm going to dump it off.
Well,
I'm going to get a 4 or 5 yard pass.
I think what the Giants might do is take away the short stuff, though, and say, Carson Wentz, you want to try to
test us.
You want your wide receivers to beat our very good corners down the field, and you want to make deep throws? We'll challenge you.
And that, to me, makes sense. Let's see if Jordan Matthews can go vertical.
I agree.
Let's see if Dorial Green-Beckham can go vertical.
Now, Beckham can't. I mean, he's if you just put him next to Calvin Johnson in, like, the combine test, size, height, weight, they're both freaks.
Got the intangibles.
But you don't have the other stuff.
Well, can he execute? Correct. That's the thing.
The route running and all that sort of stuff. So that is a risky run if you try to man up Dorial Green-Beckham. He's a physical freak, and it's going to be tough for anyone to match up with him. Second thing I want to get to from Twitter, it's kind of two related questions, Lance, and I've asked this to Tatino before. I don't think I've asked it to you. A.J. Marshall, how would you fix the Giants' offense? And I'll combine that with this question from at George Day Giants. The Cowboys' high-power offense defeated the Eagles' good defense. What little key does the Giants' offense need to have the same success against the Eagles' defense?
Well, first of all, I would not say that the Cowboys' high-powered offense defeated the Eagles' defense effectively, consistently throughout the course of the game.
Dak Prescott struggled for 3.5 quarters.
And also, let's not forget, and I brought this up on yesterday's show, too. I'll say it again. Philadelphia contained Ezekiel Elliott for the majority of that game, John. He wasn't running wild like he was. His numbers, he finished with 96 yards. It took him 22 carries. The
Under
numbers
100.
Are not bad.
No,
but
not
Philly
great.
To contain him, you know, I think the Eagles defense actually did a really nice job against the Dallas offense.
The very end.
But what happened at the very end was, to me, Prescott decided, you know what, I'm not just going to air it out down the field to Dez Bryant. I'm going to work all of my other options. And if you noticed on that last drive, Cole Beasley made a play. You know, Jason Witten had the touchdown. Elliott was involved. They had a number of different guys that they brought into the mix, whereas earlier in the game, Prescott was just trying to air it out to Dez, and then they got away from the run game. When they're balanced, yeah, you're going to test most defenses. So it wasn't necessarily Dallas's high-powered offense. It was just the decision-making by Prescott later in the game as opposed to what he was doing earlier in the contest.
One more tweet, at E underscore the chosen one. If we sustain long drives and shorten their time of possession, we will keep the defense fresh to get home in later stages. That's great. But first, you have to sustain long drives on offense. And that's something that the Giants have been unable to do. Even in their big offensive game against Baltimore, it was big plays. It wasn't long, sustained drives. So that's something they have been unable to do all year long.
Well, Baltimore would put together, you're right, a lengthy drive, and then the Giants would answer it with one play for 70 yards. And that's great. Hey, that's fine. I always say time of possession doesn't necessarily dictate victories.
If you
can get the one big play, but who's to say you can rely on the one big play?
And really, that was the only game the Giants have been able to get those big plays to make up for that lack of time of possession. I want to get to the calls. You guys have been waiting. My buddy Shakes, how are you, pal? He's in Baltimore, Maryland. We talked to Shakes about 2 weeks ago, Lance. I don't think you've talked to him in a while,
I have not
right?
talked to him in
What's
a while,
up, Shakes?
Right?
What's going on, John and Lance, man? Excuse my my phone. It's dying on you. I've been holding on for an hour, so just excuse it, please.
It sounds fine, Shakes. Go ahead.
You're going to hear some beeping.
Okay.
No worries.
Sorry about that.
I wanted to get on some things real
quick.
Yes, sir. Which I was talking about, the hurries and sacks. Now, the sacks, it's great for, disrupting the downs. Because it makes it harder for you to get a first down.
Yes.
And it also, it pays these defensive players.
Correct.
But hurries is everything. Hurries is everything because it's disrupting the quarterback. And that's your job. You're supposed to disrupt the quarterback, not have him have time back there to read his options. So hurries is great. So So good job, JPP and Olivia Vernon.
Yeah, Shakes, real quick, real fast. I know your phone's dying. If you go back, OC said back when he had that 7-sack game against the Eagles, he says, I've had better games against tackles. I just happened to get home that game. And sometimes sacks aren't really, you know, a good showing of how well you play. Now finish up, Shakes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No doubt. Next thing is y'all know I've been talking about these linebackers for years, and I said it, and I brought out the article last year. I said, if you have some good linebackers, you can be a top-10 defense. Looks like we're going to be a top-10 defense because we went out there and got some legit linebackers. But the weakest link to me is the middle linebacker, Shepard. I think he needs to be on the outside and playing on special teams. K-Rob and B.J. Goodson need to get time out there. We need somebody in there at middle that can do it. And I think K-Rob has been playing lights out.
Well, Shakes, the point that I'll bring up in relation to what you just said.
I mean, K-Rob is playing a lot, by the way.
Yeah, think about the formations that the Giants have run on defense. And I would say that the middle linebacker is actually not on the field more often than not. Keenan Robinson, some of these other versatile linebackers have gotten the majority of the snaps because of the personnel that the opposition lines up. You know, that's why we've seen how effective Keenan Robinson has been. Jonathan Casillas, too, has received a lot of snaps. And even Landon Collins, to me, who's like a hybrid guy because they're lining him up everywhere. I understand the point about maybe the middle linebacker, even though the Giants have been very effective in stopping the run this season. They're top 10 in that department. But based on snaps, they haven't really had three linebackers on the field very often.
No doubt. My last thing before my phone dies.
Yeah.
Yes, we're getting the notice, I can tell.
But here's my thing. We want to run the ball. We are last in rushing.
Yes.
Which is making us around the 20th in offense overall. But we're like 6th in passing or something around there. So my thing is this. And this is what I've been saying for years. Like, we are going to powder puff. We don't have no fullback, fellas. We're going out there, and y'all just said it. Donnell and Ty cannot block. And our offensive line is not complete. So my thing is, Jerry Reese, go get a fullback. Where's the Terminator? Where's he at when you need him?
John Connor.
Larry Donnell needs to be used in specialties, as in goal line situations, or throw him out in the slot. You use Ty, and you use Jarrell Adams more. Jarrell Adams needs to be the blocking tight end. And for God's sake, if you can go out there and get a Joe Thomas, Jerry Reese, go get him. Please, just do your job. Do your job.
Thank you, Shakes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you for holding, buddy. Sorry for making you hold on for so long.
Should mention in relation to his last comment, the trade deadline is today.
Correct.
At 4 p.m. That was why he brought up Joe Thomas, who's been rumored to be on the market, at least with respect to the Cleveland Browns.
Rumored, though the head coach would say otherwise.
Yes, well, but you know what? We always see that, too, where coaches and players say one thing and then a guy is shipped out of town.
By the way, and I looked this up, hopefully Shakes is still out there listening. Kelvin Shepard, 215 snaps. Guess how many snaps Keenan Robinson has taken?
Well, more, I would say.
I'd take a guess. Give me a number. I'll use this as a baseline. Jonathan Casillas has played 391.
Okay. Which is more than 100 more than what you just said with Shepard,
170
right?
more than Shepard. So how many do you think Keenan Robinson has played?
Keenan Robinson, I would say... I'd say he's probably right up there with Casillas. I'm going to say he played maybe about 375.
367.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
That's why I brought that up to Shakes. I mean, we could talk about the middle linebacker all we want, but the three linebackers are not out there very often.
Yeah, Hankins has played 396, just as another example. Snacks has played 313. And then you have, Jesus, pardon me, Jason Pierre-Paul, 506.
So now they're up to 500 now. Last show we did this, they were at 400.
Yeah, and Vernon's at 479. Wow.
I don't know if you want to bring up who's 3-4 on the list in the NFL because that will truly put things in perspective.
I can check that here. Hold on one second, and we're going to go past one here. I want to get to our final core. And by the way, just for an example, I think Landon Collins has played every single snap. He's at 522, which means Jason Pierre-Paul has rested all of 16 snaps this year.
It's remarkable. Yeah. Well, knock on wood, they hopefully stay durable.
And Vernon, by the way, is not far behind because if you remember, week number 2, he missed when he hurt his wrist, or was that week number 1 when he hurt his wrist? He missed around 20 snaps the week that he hurt his wrist. So if you put those 20 snaps back in,
it was
JPP are about even. So just to take that as an example. All right, final call of the show. He's been holding. I want to get to him. Big Ed, I'm going to give you about 45 seconds to a minute. Say whatever you want. It's good to hear from you. What's going on, Big Ed?
What's up, Big John? And what's up, Big Lance?
No, it's Small Lance.
Got the tag team.
What's happening, Big
yes,
Ed?
Yes.
Go ahead, man. You got 60 man. Seconds. We're doing that. Great. Go ahead.
All right. What I got?
I don't know. What do you got?
Hey, just beat the Eagles. Just go beat the Eagles. You know how to beat the Eagles. You beat them like they're supposed to be beaten.
I've had some trouble recently.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing I had in mind. Hey,
had some trouble.
What's the what is the Spags' record against rookie quarterbacks?
Oh boy, I don't know.
Oh boy, I have to look that up. Spags' record.
Okay.
Against rookie quarterbacks. Good question. Well, is this related this is related, obviously, to the Eagles with Carson Wentz, I guess, is what you're alluding
right,
to.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He's a rookie quarterback. You got to attack a rookie with pressure. Keep giving him a tons of amounts of pressure. As far as the Eagles' defense, we got to do what we did, what we were supposed to have done that game, I think Victor Cruz got hurt. We went straight down the field in the first series with running the power. Just run the ball with power. That's how you beat the Eagles. It doesn't matter who it is coaching.
I agree with that.
It doesn't matter who
they have. The wide nine.
Beat the Eagles as a Philly way. Run with power. That's it.
All right, Big Ed.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey. Hope to see you there, man. I'll try to make this one.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm Big Ed.
Thanks, Big Ed.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely.
That was by far the most succinct I've ever heard Big Ed before. And by the way, you mentioned beating the Eagles. And you said, oh, we know how to beat the Eagles. Well.
That has not been the case.
Dating back to 2008. The Giants played the Eagles for the first time in 2008 when the Giants were dominant that year and probably the best team in football until the whole Burris incident. They beat Philly on November 9th, 36-31. Since that game, they have beaten Philadelphia three times.
Since the second matchup of 2008.
Correct.
Right?
They have lost to Philadelphia 13 times. So the Giants are 3-13. Let me repeat that, folks. 3-13 against the Philadelphia Eagles in their last 16 games. Wow. And that includes 4 in a row.
The Eagles have certainly had the Giants' number. I think that's well documented. Yeah, it's not an easy game, and it doesn't matter where the game is played, too. Forget it. Whether it be Philly, whether it be here at MetLife Stadium, makes no difference. Eagles have had a very good track record against the Giants, regardless of what the scheme is, regardless of the personnel, you name it.
In fact, two of the Giants' wins have come in Philly. So if you want to talk about just games here at Giants Stadium or the Meadowlands, whatever you want to call it, MetLife Stadium, because it's been in three different names since the streak has been going on. So the Giants at home against the Eagles, 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, 0-4, 0-5, 1-5, 1-6, 1-7, 1-8.
So one win in their last nine
at home against the Eagles. And that goes back to Andy Reid, folks. That's not just Chip Kelly. That goes back to Andy Reid.
Well, because the one common element of Philly, I would say, regardless of the change.
Their only win, by the way, was a 42-7 blowout victory the final game of the 2012 season when I think
both teams were wasn't that the game where Ruben Randall had two touchdowns?
Yes, it was.
From what I remember? Yes.
Very good. And Henry Hinoski had his touchdown catch as well.
I know, the one time he's out of the room. And we were talking about that when we had him on last week. Yeah. We were talking about that dance. But what I was going to bring up is the common element for the Eagles, John, because you brought up that it went back to Andy Reid. They've always been known for their front seven play, specifically their defensive line. That has not changed no matter who coaches the team, no matter who's the defensive coordinator. They've always been a physically minded, grinded out type of team, which has always given the Giants challenges in the trenches.
All right. 4-3 defensive ends. You asked for it, you shall receive.
Well, I'm sure the disparity is quite big.
Well, let's go
from number 3 to number 2, obviously.
Well,
because I'm assuming JPP and Vernon
is
one,
at 506. Vernon is number 2 at 479.
There we go.
Cameron Jordan is number 3. Guess how many
said
snaps.
479 is Vernon?
Is Vernon, yes. How many snaps do you think, plays do you think Cameron Jordan has had this year?
I'm going to say 379. He's 100 less.
No, he's actually in the 400s. He's at 433.
Okay.
So he's 73 less than JPP. It's still enough. Right behind him is Muhammad Wilkerson at 428.
All right, so there's two guys then now in 400s.
Correct. Right behind him is Michael Johnson at 418.
So he's also in the 400s. That's three.
Now remember, since we did this last, the Giants have had a bye and other teams have played two
games.
That's
a good point. It's a very good point.
Carlos Dunlap, 414, and Everson Griffin, 406. So there are 5 other players in the 400s. Otherwise, you're looking at basically 100 more snaps than most other players.
Well, and those numbers are going to balance out because the Bengals, for example, just went to London, so they're going to have some time off.
And the Jets, have they had their bye yet?
Don't believe the Jets have had their bye.
Dominic.
No, they have not. They have not had their bye.
They have not had their bye yet?
I know, because I have Matt Forte on my fantasy team, so I can
tell you that. That's right. They actually have a bye week 11. You're absolutely right.
See,
I know that, too.
It helps to have a guy
yes,
on a fantasy
absolutely.
Team.
And pick
up on these
and I don't think the Saints have had their bye week yet either, have they?
No, they did because I was without Drew Brees.
Okay.
See, you're picking on my fantasy.
I am, apparently. See, all right, so Cameron Jordan is 433. He's about right then in terms of the rest of the players, but the Bengals haven't yet. Minnesota is going to have their bye, I think, coming up. Oh, no, they just had their bye 2 weeks ago.
They had their bye.
So
too.
Griffin at yeah. 406, that's still a lot. But either way, a lot of snaps there for the defensive
yeah.
ends.
A lot of snaps.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Dottino and Deal. On Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Then probably, I'm guessing it's going to be Paulie Dotz and Howard Cross on Thursday. Thanks for joining us. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live as the Giants get ready to take on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Have a good one.